From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, what rapture? John Michael Greer joins us. Apocalypse, not. Here's what's happening. Russia says they will deploy new missiles aimed at U.S. missile defense sites in Europe if we go ahead with the planned Shield, despite Russia's concern. Russia will station missiles in its westernmost Kaliningrad region and other areas if Russia and NATO fail to reach a deal on the U.S.-led missile defense plans. He said, according to the Russian president, in a very tough statement that seemed to be aimed at rallying domestic support there, Russia considers the plans for missile shields in Europe, including Romania and Poland, to be a threat to its forces. But the Obama administration insists they are meant to fend off any potential threat from Iran. We shall see. As we reported last night, engineers fought desperately to save Russia's Phobos Grunt spacecraft after the Martian probe sent a first sign of life finally, more than 2 weeks after being stranded in orbit. After days of frustrating silence, contact with the probe was made at a European Space Agency ground station in Perth, Western Australia. Science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, was monitoring all that and had the story for us last night. Richard, what's the latest on that?
Well, they are now getting telemetry every few hours as the spacecraft passes over Perth, which has a direct commercial satellite link to the contractor in Russia that actually built the spacecraft. They are getting downlink telemetry for about 6 minutes on every pass. They're going to try to analyze what went wrong after the launch 2 weeks ago, why the craft fell silent, did not leave orbit, did not ignite its engines like it was supposed to do. And if they can, they're going to try to upload a new computer program, assuming it's a software issue, and try to resume the effort to get this thing out of orbit and on a flight trajectory to Mars. The problem is we are getting conflicting reports now that the window to Mars may have closed. You can only get to Mars because of the limited chemical energy of the systems when the two planets are basically aligned. And the window is opening in a day or so for the American mission, which leaves on Saturday morning at 10:02 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But the window is closing or has closed for the Russian mission because it has a different approach trajectory. It's supposed to rendezvous with the inner moon Phobos, much more complex than the American mission, which is going to land on the surface and put down the heaviest rover we've ever put on Mars, about the size of a VW car. So we don't know tonight whether they're going to be successful in analyzing the problem, whether they're going to be able to upload a software fix, whether they can even physically get the spacecraft to Mars. So some Russian experts are now talking about some very exciting and interesting alternatives, including sending the Phobos Grunt mission, the entire 13-ton spacecraft, to rendezvous with an Earth-crossing asteroid. And guess what asteroid would be most conveniently available, George?
Which one, Richard?
YU-55.
That one again. But, you know, if they don't get these engines started, when will this spacecraft tentatively plunge to the planet?
Well, that again is up for grabs because initially, a couple of weeks ago when this thing disappeared, one of my inside experts and I were looking at trajectory data coming from NORAD, and we noticed that the orbit was not decaying the way it should. It, in fact, was kind of lifting itself almost by magic when it came around perihelion or the perigee, the closest point to Earth. From that, we felt that the onboard systems actually were firing little rockets to keep it up in orbit, meaning that it was not really dead, Jim, but maybe playing a game of possum. Well, that has complicated the effort to calculate when this thing would come back in because it's still doing that. In fact, it's raising its perigee by half a kilometer per day, which is not what a dead spacecraft should be doing. So that behavior, coupled with the successful radio transmissions last night, and the Russians' effort to save it and maybe send it on its way or send it to a new trajectory, we really can't say. But the latest projections by the Russians are this thing, if they can't do what they want to do with it, may or may not come back in as late as March of next year.
We're also hearing rumors today, Richard, that the Russians think maybe the CIA was responsible for screwing around with this spacecraft. What do you think of that?
Well, look at Medvedev's extraordinarily weird response yesterday in basically threatening the West for the first time since the Cold War ended with Soviet missiles.
Yeah.
Obviously, somebody somewhere in the Kremlin thinks there's some skullduggery. And remember, months and months and months ago, like a year ago, when I was talking about Phobos and publishing on Enterprise our major Phobos story, that Phobos is not a rock, like you believe, mm-hmm. but in fact an ancient spacecraft in orbit around Mars, like the Russian many decades ago felt. If the Russians feel that they had the first chance to get proof in public of extraterrestrial intelligence, and the Americans didn't want them to, and they sabotaged their precious Phobos grunt mission, you could say they might be ticked off and responding the way Medvedev did yesterday morning. This will all shake out in the next several days, and maybe by next week we might actually have some definitive news to report when I do a full show on Wednesday night for 3 hours.
You will have a lot of material for us, Richard. Thank you so much. Richard C. Hoagland. The president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh, has signed a deal in which he will step down after months of unrest. Mr. Saleh signed the agreement, brokered by Yemen's Gulf Arab neighbors. Under the plan, he will transfer his powers to his deputy ahead of an early election and in return will get immunity from prosecution. But those protesting don't want him to have immunity. The 69-year-old leader has ruled Yemen since 1978. Now, if you eat a lot of food out of a can, listen to this story. Eating canned food every day may raise the levels of a compound, which is called BPA, in you, more than previously suspected, according to a new study. People who ate a serving of canned soup every day, for example, for 5 days, had BPA levels of 20.8 micrograms, whereas people who simply ate fresh soup had levels of 1.1 micrograms per liter, according to the study. BPA is found in many canned foods. It's a byproduct of chemicals used to prevent what? Corrosion. Taking slightly too much paracetamol day after day can be fatal, according to experts. This is a pain pill. A dangerous dose just might be a few pills too many taken regularly over days, weeks, or months. Researchers at a university saw 161 cases of staggered overdose at a hospital over a 16-year period. People taking tablets for chronic pain might not realize they were taking too many or recognize symptoms of overdose and liver injury. So be careful if you're taking that drug. Be careful if you're taking any drug. This week marks the 40th anniversary of D.B. Cooper's infamous skyjacking of a Northwest Airlines jet, where he took $200,000 and jumped. He vanished. They don't know what happened to him. But now there's an unearthed rare book from an Oregon publisher that claims to be the memoir of Cooper. It was published in 1983. It was called Ha Ha Ha. It talks about clues and everything else. And they think, well, maybe D.B. wrote this book. Saturday night, Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast will address the D.B. Cooper story. A Utah woman became so annoyed by her husband's addiction to video games that she put him on sale on Craigslist. No takers, yes. The stress of daily life has sparked a new phenomenon, sleep texting. Have you ever done this? People with a rare condition send incoherent text messages while asleep to their friends and family, completely unaware that they're doing it. A sleep specialist, Dr. David Cunnington of Australia, says patients had reported incidents of sleep texting and said he has advised people to leave their mobile phones outside the bedroom so they don't do that. Up next, we're going to be talking about the catastrophe into the dark night of soul. What is that? Find out next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Patricia Ariadne, PhD, is a licensed psychotherapist and board-certified counselor, teaching university psychology classes, speaks at conferences and seminars in the subject of personal transformation and social change. Her work includes exploring the effects of crises and the lives of people who have not only survived but thrived through life's darkest hours. And we're going to spend the hour with Patricia here on Coast to Coast. Hello, Doctor. How are you?
Hi. How are you, George?
Good. Looking forward to this. Great title, by the way, Drinking the Dragon. How did you come up with that?
Before we get in started, I wanted to say that I'm so much enjoying your involvement in Ancient Aliens, the television series.
I have fun doing that.
I love that. How I got that title, Drinking the Dragon, it came to me in an unusual way. In about 1987, I was napping, and I heard very clearly a voice in my head saying, Americans will be drinking the dragon more. This is kind of curious. So I pondered on this for a very long time because the dragon is a very complex symbol. It represents the very highest and the very lowest in human nature.
Interesting.
For example, spiritual masters of old used to be called dragons as a title of respect. But the dragon can also symbolize the very most untamed and instinctual part of our nature.
I would suspect, Patricia, that a lot of people are feeling the dragon right about now, aren't they?
Yes, I think so. And I think what this phrase was referring to was that we were going to have to confront the things about ourselves that maybe we've projected onto others, not only as individuals, but even as a culture, as a nation. So drinking the dragon translates to doing work on ourselves so that we know ourselves better. And it's just part of this process called the dark night of soul, which I think people are tumbling in more and more through outer crises, and we can talk about that. Someone said recently to me, either people have been in the dark night of soul, they are in one now, or they will be. And I seemed, in my work as a psychotherapist, I'm seeing this more and more in my own practice, in the practice of others, in the material that I read. I just think people need to know what it is that's happening.
Sure.
What I want to talk about.
Is this happening to them on their own? Are they being pulled into it? What's happening here?
Well, I have a little formula that says, until the pain of staying the same is greater than the fear of change, people don't usually act. We become complacent, and complacency is the enemy of self-awareness. And I think we're being catapulted out of our complacency by some of these experiences that are happening in our culture, economic upheavals, loss of job, loss of our homes. People that are coming to me suffering through the dark night of soul have also had experiences in their family life, the death of a loved one, catastrophic illness, just a number of things tend to be triggering this process. And the dark night of soul is a very long but profound experience of psychological and spiritual upheaval. And it really, at bottom, is a spiritual process. And I think what it's all about is bringing us back to our spiritual center.
Patricia, why do some people bounce back quicker than others? They can get through this dark night of soul. They can get through this drinking the dragon, as you call it. But others just can't cope with it. How come?
Well, I think a lot of it is what the person brings to the table. If they have spiritual leanings, if they can find spiritual resources, if they can find guidance, if they have had a prior good orientation to life, they've been able to hold down a job, they have sufficient relationships. So a lot of it is, what does the person have to deal with? What are their resources to deal with this process? And by the way, as Americans, we are used to being able to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
We're very much interested in doing rather than being. And this is a process, George, people have to sit with. It's the feminine principle, which is familiar with darkness. It's familiar with waiting. It's familiar with death. This is a death and rebirth process, and it's very scary because people don't understand it, and they don't have the patience for it. And this cannot be controlled. This process can be collaborated with, and I'd like to talk about some of the ways we can do that.
Okay.
But you don't control it. You can't fix it. You can't will it through affirmations. It's a process that I think is happening to us because it's time for us to mature spiritually.
But you can adjust to it, can't you?
I think it's very difficult. Some of the things that happen to people is besides depression is they feel very empty. There's a great void that they're feeling, and the tendency is to want to fill that with more activity, maybe a change of spouse, a new car, even drugs, sex, anything that it. What that hole is, George, in my opinion, is a God-shaped hole. Only spirit can fill it. We need to get in touch with ourselves as spiritual beings. And this process is a spiritual process. And it's generated by the divine. And it's an innate spiritual pattern within us. I think it's a blueprint. And it used to be able to be experienced within the confines of monasteries and convents. And before that, in mystery schools and temples. And now, people are experiencing it, everyday people going about their lives in a conventional world, and it's scaring the hell out of them. They don't understand what the process is, and that's what I want to talk about in my book, that this is a process that has danger in it. It could be short-circuited. Some people may not be able to really navigate it very well, but those who can, what I look for with the people I interviewed in my book, first of all, people that stayed with it learned a lot about themselves, including the dragon part of themselves, the shadow.
And what is that shadow part of most people?
It's the part of ourselves that we just want to project out on others. Our greed, our larceny, our envy. It's not to make people necessarily feel worse about themselves, but it's a very important step along the spiritual path is to see ourselves as whole beings, not perfect beings, but complete. You know, as long as we're in the human body, we're not going to be perfect. But to see ourselves as whole individuals, and that means integrating the parts of ourselves that can bring harm to others when we're unconscious of them. And that's the dragon. That's the watery depths. That's part of this process. It's only part of it, but it's a very important part of growing up, taking responsibility for who we are.
Patricia, in your practice as a psychotherapist, do you find... Are you seeing a common denominator with people? Is there something out there that keeps cropping up more and more?
Yeah, people have to learn. What's very important for them is to learn what can support me when I can no longer support myself emotionally or psychologically because things are falling apart. As it is with individuals, it's also that way with the outer world. Things are being, they have to fall apart before they can be remade into something greater. The purpose of the Dark Night of Soul to me is to remember that we're spiritual beings and that our life here is part of our journey back to the heart of God. However people think of God, I'm speaking right. Very broadly as a source. We learn the limits of our personal will. I think a lot of it is to get the ego in right relationship to soul or the higher self. We need to ask ourselves what supports us when we can no longer support ourselves. People are beginning with this process to ask the really important questions that start a spiritual process, like, who am I really? Who am I really? What is my purpose here? What's my relationship to God or source? And George, I think a lot of times we don't ask those questions until we hit a wall or we're brought to our knees. As long as things are status quo, people don't tend to explore those questions.
I want to talk more with you, Patricia, about Drinking the Dragon, Dark Night of Soul, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, John Michael Greer joins us. His latest work, Apocalypse Not, Everything You Know About 2012, Nostradamus, and the Rapture is Wrong. Looking forward to that. Hey, by the way, are you a Coast Insider yet? Part of the club? Well, you can be for less than 25 cents a day. Join the group. It's growing at a rapid clip, and you can be one of them. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. At the top of the homepage, click Coast Insider and fill out the information, and you can be part of the club where you get downloads, podcasting, and you can download 1,000 past shows now as well. And I saw some prototypes of some new apps that we're working on, and they are absolutely riveting. So go ahead, become a member of the club, Coast Insiders. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We're with Dr. Patricia Ariadne as we talk about her work, Drinking the Dragon. Is it healthy for people to be disappointed, whether they lose a job, a relationship? Is it a healthy state to get disappointed and to try to fix it?
Well, I think that disappointment, if it leads to growing in some way or asking questions about your life, you know, disappointment can lead to greater consciousness if people, for example, decide that what did they really want to gain, and was what often happens when people slide into the dark night of soul is they reorder their priorities. That's one of the things that can come out of it. Maybe what they were disappointed in should have been a disappointment. There are things that maybe need to be higher on their list of priorities. Some of the things that can happen as a result of going through the dark night of soul is people can become not only reprioritize their life goals and activities, but a lot of the material attachments they have can recede, more detached, more shadow confrontation, healing old wounds and conflicts. One of the things that I think is very important that is coming to the fore with the culture right now and the things that you read and hear is going from me to we, having a greater service orientation. So I think in that regard, disappointment can be important. Maybe it awakens to people to what really should be more important in life, reconnecting to God. Becoming more simple is very important. How I find that the more spiritual people I know are simple people. They have a beautiful simplicity. They're not so interested in having you realize how spiritual they are as they are in helping you realize how spiritual you are. And one of the things that can come out of going through a dark night of soul is people start finding spiritual authority and answers within. I think the days of the guru in coming, you know, especially living in Southern California, where we've had a lot of experience with the spiritual teachers, they have their place. But I think now is the era where people need to find their answers within.
What if you can't? What if you can't bounce back from that shattered relationship or the job you lose or whatever is happening in your life? What if you just can't bounce back? What happens to that person?
Obviously, as a psychotherapist, I'm recommending that they find some kind of guidance, whether it's a minister, a spiritually oriented, who can understand this process or open to it, some kind of guidance, a spiritual counselor, a psychotherapist. They have to look for a support system. Sometimes medication is indicated, but I find that people who can get through this process and mine it for the treasures it might have without being medicated, I would really recommend that route. But it depends on the individual.
All right, let's take some phone calls here with you. Let's pick it up by going to Linda in Alameda, California, west of the on our wildcard line. Go ahead, Linda.
Thank you, George, and thank you, Dr. Ariadne, for this wonderful validation. In 2004, I got so ill because of working a very stressful job with the government. And I am blind from birth and had worked for 23 years and just totally broke down. And that dark night of the soul, the very bottom that you can get, and the only thing that I could say is thank you for helping me, God. And it started from there, you know, this attitude of gratitude. And luckily I was with a therapist who happened to be blind at the time, and had about 2 years of therapy and realized that with the economy and so forth, it was time for me to not have to prove myself, because I'd grown up with the adage, the only way to be successful if you're blind is to work and to make your own money and to make your own way. And I had to realize the hard way that drawing Social Security and whatnot is not such a hard thing if that's what it takes to support yourself. And, I'm 60 years old now, and I'm done proving myself. And I feel so much better having found that spiritual part of me and that beingness. And you're so right about the doingness that we all go through. Thank you so much.
Well, what a wonderful thing to talk about the gratitude. You know, the Sufis say that the greater we are loved, the more afflictions we might be visited upon us. It indicates God's great love, because the obstacle might be just the very thing we need to be catapulted into more spiritual awareness. It's a completely different way of looking at adversity than what most of us are taught. And having the gratitude for the difficulty, that shows a lot of awareness. Like, congratulations on being able to do that.
Super. Let's go next to Brooklyn, New York, east of the Rockies. Reuben, good morning and happy Thanksgiving.
Hey,
we're there.
Happy Thanksgiving, George. Happy Thanksgiving, Patricia.
Thank you, Reuben.
Yeah, I just want to say, George, I love your show. I listen whenever I can all the time.
Thank you.
Just two comments, and then I want to share a vision if possible. I totally agree with Patricia. I personally believe that in order to find that inner peace, because I have my peace, you have to completely let go of everything. You have to let go. You can't bind yourself to this world. You have to let go and know that it's going to be okay, and never worry about anything. I mean, we all have our concerns, but I believe there's a general difference between being concerned and being worried. I think being worried brings fear, and fear is of the dark one. And I agree with her totally. And if I could share this vision really quick that I had.
Sure.
I was on the phone talking to someone, and this person was going through something really bad, and I was sharing the word of the Lord with them. And it's like for a split second in time, I was taken from here. And I was in an environment where everything was white. It was just pure light, white. And at first, I thought I was standing over somebody's shoulder. But when I thought about it, it became a memory, and I was actually standing on someone's shoulder. You ever read that part of the Bible where it says we are but specks of dust between in the fingernails, like of God? Well, it's almost literally like that. You know, I was standing on this person's shoulders, and they were sitting down, and they were looking through a manhole-sized hole in the floor, the size of a manhole. And inside of that hole was our entire universe. And the person was swaying their fingers around inside of it like an ocean. And the person kind of like zoomed in on me. But anyway, the message that I got from it was that no matter how small and insignificant we think we are, He acknowledges us all, and He cares about us all.
Thank you for that beautiful message, Reuben. Very much. Thank you.
As we get into this, Patricia, you were going to give some tips to people to kind of get into the mode that would help them. What do you recommend?
First of all, you know, there's things, if they can possibly, this will sound strange to people because many people are out of work and not by choice, but sometimes people in the throes of the dark night of soul do have to work less. They need to work with their dreams if possible. Meditate, pray, reading of sacred scriptures and texts of all kinds, taking walks, being in nature, working in a garden, making soup, as funny as that sounds, listening to soothing music, writing poetry. What might be a little harder for people is socializing less, being more developing what we're talking about. Is developing an inner life, and that means less TV, less computer time. It may include expression in art, dancing, things that help people go through a process that's really organic. Like I said, you can't manipulate it, but you can collaborate with it. And these are very different kinds of things. It's getting more into the rhythm of life, and it's not familiar to a lot of Americans. But these things could help them get through this process without over-medicating or with prescription drugs or any other way, which is a concern of mine. I think that that's kind of the first thing people want to do is numb themselves out or compartmentalize this process. And it doesn't want to be compartmentalized because it does, if it's allowed to go its course, it changes you in every cell and atom. You are a different person at the end of it.
Let's go to Erica in Alder, Montana. Hey, good morning, Erica. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been through this dark night of soul, and I have to say it almost killed me.
Jeez. Well, you pulled out of it, I trust.
Well, I'm here to tell you about it, so yeah, I did. I was sitting on my front porch, and I was contemplating killing myself, and it finally, I knew what I was doing was wrong, and I didn't want to be that kind of person anymore. I decided that I didn't want to be that kind of person anymore. So I decided that I couldn't be the kind of person I wanted to be. And I knew that. So I asked Christ to come inside of me and be through me who I needed to be, who he wanted me to be. And that's what brought me out of it, was my trust in him.
Well, see, there's an example for you, Patricia, that by reaching within to do that, you don't necessarily have to be outwardly religious to get this done, do you?
No, I'm talking about spirituality. When people come into my practice, I want them to bring whatever their spiritual orientation is, because that's what's important. It's not any particular way of thinking or believing. It's spirituality in a broad sense, whatever brings meaning and significance on a spiritual level to the individual. So I want to make that clear. I'm speaking non-denominationally, but nevertheless, people should rely on whatever spiritual underpinnings they have.
That sure helps. Let's go to Austin, Texas.
All right.
We've got first-time caller. Dalton is with us. Dalton, go ahead.
Thank you. How are you all this evening?
Good, good.
I wanted to ask your guest if she is aware of an author whose name is Dr. Gerald May.
Yes, okay. I am.
you're aware then that he has written a book, the title of which is The Dark Night of the Soul.
Yes,
And refers to Santa Teresa of Avila as being the first evidence recorded evidence of this concept of spirituality.
Yes, and, actually, the
what,
phrase...
What do you think of that book in terms of the way it presents it?
I like the book. Thomas More is also another author that talks about the Dark Night of Soul. And the Dark Night of Soul is a phrase that's actually associated with St. John of the Cross. He was a Spanish mystic who lived in the 16th century. And the difference is today, as I said a little earlier, you don't have to be a priest or a nun. People are starting to experience this in the everyday world. And it's bewildering because they haven't been schooled in it. So anything that you can read that helps you better understand this process, I highly recommend. Because I think that the biggest fear that people have is, am I going crazy? What's wrong with me? I feel alone. Is anybody else experiencing this? And I'm here to tell you that people are experiencing it in greater numbers all the time. A lot of that is because of what's happening to us in the culture right now. We are in upheaval. However, I think things may get worse before they get better, but I think it all has a purpose, and that's the difference, that there is purpose behind the chaos.
And let me ask you this. Do you think most people can get this done on their own, or do they have to see therapists and psychiatrists to do this?
If they see a therapist, I would recommend they try to find somebody who understands this process, and that may be challenging. I know that sometimes people even go to their priests and their ministers, and this isn't fully understood. But they need to find somebody who has this broader orientation and doesn't just label it off as a mental dysfunction. And prescribe medication for depression.
All right. Let's go to Lorianne in British Columbia, Canada. We'll squeeze you in here. Go ahead, Lorianne.
Okay. Hi. Hi. Patricia, you're wonderful. Everything
you
talked about tonight makes so much sense to me. I used to have God in my life at one time, and somewhere along the way I lost him. I have problems with addictions. And I know the only thing that's going to get me out of it is if I find God again. But I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Well, is there anyone that you've found? Have you looked for someone to help guide you through this process?
I just don't know who to go to.
Okay. Do you have a church? Are you involved with a church?
Yes.
Well, that's a start, isn't it? We've only got about a minute or so to go here, Patricia, but I don't want to leave poor Lorianne just hanging.
No.
What do you quickly recommend she do?
Well, I do have a workbook that I would recommend that goes with the Drinking the Dragon, and sometimes that helps. And I do talk to people over the phone if they're at quite a distance. And you may want to do that. You may want to contact me, and I'll give you my website address, and maybe I can help you a little bit and give you a little more guidance than I can right now.
Well, you may give out your website address right now, Patricia.
Okay. It's www.drariadne, one word. That's drariadne.com. And you can get Drinking the Dragon, the book, and you can get also the process workbook. And you can also contact me for consultation sessions.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Patricia. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And thank you for so much for being on Coast to Coast AM. Up next, John Michael Greer joins us as we talk about apocalypse, not on Coast to Coast AM.